Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to New Books in African American Studies, a channel on the New Books Network. I'm your host, Adam Xavier McNeil. On today's podcast, we have Dr. Erica Armstrong Dunbar, the Charles and Mary Beard Professor of History at Rutgers University, New Brunswick. Dr. Dunbar is on the program to discuss her new book, She Came to Slay, The Life and Times of Harriet Tubman, published by 37 Inc., an imprint of Simon & Schuster. Welcome to the show, Dr. Dunbar. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks for having me, Adam.
Definitely. And so, you know, before we begin, congratulations on the publication of your brand new book, Dr. Dunbar. You are now a published Tubman scholar. You know, can you tell us how you came to write She Came to Slay?
Yeah. No, well, first, thank you for being kind and for acknowledging me as a Tubman scholar. It's an honor. And, you know, it's an honor. It's a process that I wasn't necessarily expecting. So a while back, my editor, Dawn Davis, approached me, and she had been in conversation with Deborah Martin Chase, the executive producer of Harriet, the film. And she knew that the film would be released in the fall of 2019. And she asked if I would be interested in writing basically a new contemporary version of a biography on Tubman. And, you know, it wasn't necessarily something that I was thinking about doing, which is different for most historians. Most historians, you know, we have something, a passion project that we work on for many, many, many years. And finally, it comes to fruition in a book, something between covers. And so this was somewhat different in that I was approached to write this book in part because my last book centered the life of a fugitive woman. And so a suggestion that I really needed to think about expanding that and to include other women who were fugitives in the 19th century. And so I said, of course. And really, the first thing that I did was I reached out to a couple of Tubman scholars, folks who had written texts about 15 years ago. Catherine Clinton and was the first person that I talked to. Kate Clifford Larson as well. And both were extremely helpful and gracious. And I just sort of set about trying to write a book, a biography of Tubman that was different from others, and that would be something that resonated in 2019 at a moment in time in which the Harriet film, a conversation about Harriet on the $20 bill, that sort of all of these things were coming together, and it seemed to be the perfect time to think about Tubman and perhaps refashion her a bit.
And your book is one that is picking up a lot of buzz. You know, social media is buzzing. And so, you know, that's a huge, huge way that a lot of people like my mother came to find out, along with my other family members. And so your title is amazing. You know, she came to slay. That's a great title. So we cannot get too far into the conversation without asking about the title of the book. Did you already have She Came to Slay in mind early in the process?
Not at all. I was, I sort of knew that I wanted this book to be fresh. I wanted it to be contemporary. And I think that's important when for historians who spend so much time in the 18th and 19th century, like myself, it's, I think, sometimes important to be able to connect to audiences that live in the present and that sort of think about the 21st century more often than not. And so I was writing the book, and I knew that I wanted to come up with a title that would resonate for not just sort of millennial readers, but younger readers, people who were sort of connected to contemporary culture. And I kept thinking, okay, who's a marker? Who does everybody know and sort of think about in a contemporary kind of way? And of course, you know, it was Beyonce who popped into my mind. And perhaps I was watching, I don't know, Homecoming. I don't remember. but I just sort of automatically thought, well, we think so much about Tubman as a warrior, and warriors come, you know, they slay, and they slay all day. And so that's sort of how I came to the title. And I brought the title to my editor, and she signed off on it immediately. So, and I'm hoping it also signals to the reader that throughout the book, there are moments or connects to current culture. So in the book, there are call outs in the book. So there's a section called Harriet's Homies, right? And it's a section about who Harriet Tubman's friends were in the 19th century, you know, and it's John Brown and Frederick Douglass and Lucretia Mott and, you know, famous 19th century historical figures. But I frame it as a more contemporary understanding of who her peeps were. There's another section called Let Me Rap to You Real Quick, and it's famous Harriet Tubman quotes. And so the call-outs, in addition to a significant number of illustrations, allowed me to sort of present Tubman in a different light.
And it's a particular light that is amazing. And as you mentioned before, I believe is going to resonate with a number of different audiences. And so with that as well, you know, you're like we had mentioned before, you're now, you know, the newest member of the Tubman scholar tradition. And so during the research and writing process for She Came to Slay, did you come across any new information and or insights about Harriet Tubman and her life that you might not have known prior to beginning the writing process?
Yeah, you know, I think that I knew a lot about Tubman. You know, I've taught Tubman. I've benefited from the scholarship of other biographers who've done a lot of work on Tubman. So there was a text that came out in 2008 on Tubman by Beverly Lowry, as I said before, Catherine Clinton and Kate Clifford Larson's work came out about 15 years ago. There are documentary readers with essays, people like Lois Horton, and others have written, about Tubman. And so, you know, it wasn't my plan to go into archives and write a text with sort of brand new information. That you know, of course, I've written books like that, but that wasn't, to be honest, it wasn't my primary goal. It was my goal to kind of harvest that information, the information that I had known from studying her and teaching her, and then to refashion it and present it in a new way. There was one, I would say, the one sort of archival surprise was shared with me by Kate Clifford Larson. And there's a photo of Tubman that appeared in a newspaper in the early 20th century that really had never been used before. I think it had been used much earlier in the middle of the 20th century, but hasn't really been a part of any of the biographies. And it's an image of her that is not well known. And so I'd say archivally, like, that was the surprise and contribution to the text that I hadn't seen before, hadn't thought about before. And once again, it helps us visualize Tubman differently. And I think that's one thing that I wanted to do with the book. And I had illustrations in part because, as all of us who work on enslaved people in the 18th and 19th century, you know, we don't have much in the way of visual markers of our subjects. And while there are many photos of Tubman later on in her life, as well as the more recent, recently displayed image of her down at the National Museum of African American History and Culture in D.C., most of the imagery we have of Tubman is as an older woman, right? And so her head is covered, her hands are clasped. And I was very interested in helping readers imagine Tubman at different moments in her life. What did Tubman look like as a girl? Mm-hmm. What did Tubman, and of course, at that point, she's not Tubman, she's Araminta Ross, right? What did Araminta Ross look like as a girl? What did Araminta Ross look like when she's a teenager and she is confronted with a difficult situation that ends up with her skull being fractured and changing her life? What does she look like when she's married to John Tubman? And so all of these things, these images of her as a younger woman, I thought were very important. And because we don't have those photos, I worked with a really talented artist, to Monica Ahanu, who helped me kind of bring her to life. And I think that as we deconstruct Tubman, that we have to understand her as more than just the person who spent nearly a decade on the Underground Railroad, helping people, that, you know, that was an important part of Tubman's life and what we know her for in terms of her fame. But that was only, 10 years at the most of her life? And Tubman lived until her 90s. And so she was a much more complicated, nuanced person. And I was hoping to really get at that in part by a strong visual presence for this book. So I would really call this biography different in that respect. I wanted people to see Tubman and think about the girl, the young woman, the elderly woman, and how she changes over time.
Correct. And one of the questions I actually have for you specifically about, you know, Tubman and the varying Tubmans that people know, and maybe the Tubmans that people maybe not know. But before we get there, I want to know a little something from you as the author. Do you remember the first time that you actually learned about Harriet Tubman?
You know what? I actually hadn't even thought about that while I was writing, except for, you know, I had flashbacks, of course, thinking about Tubman. But I actually believe the first place that I learned about Tubman was in Sunday school. And it wasn't necessarily in my grammar school, that it was in Sunday school. And sort of, I remember images of her in the Sunday school classroom, which isn't surprising when we think about Tubman's close and deep relationship with Christianity. And so I remember images of her from Sunday school, and then sort of, you know, a few kind of Black history moments that whizzed by in grammar school. And it probably wasn't until I went to college where I was able to kind of study Tubman in a more kind of in depth and critical way. But really, it's funny, you know, you asking me that makes me think automatically about putting on tights and patent leather shoes and mints in my grandmother's purse and sitting in Sunday school learning Bible verses, but also thinking about Harriet Tubman.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
You know, those kinds of memories are amazing. And I'm glad that I asked you that question because, you know, that wasn't exactly on my particular list. But as you spoke, that particular question about the first time that you know, like I said before, as a new Tubman scholar, you know, something to reflect on. And so, you know, it also coincided with my next question, thinking about depictions. So your book is not only coming out, you know, it's officially going to be released November 5th, but there's something else that's happening in November, on November 1st, and that's the release of the new Harriet film. And so can you talk to us about, you know, your connection to the film, you know, and also, you know, it's happening around the same time, so must not be by coincidence, huh?
Well, you know, no, it was not by coincidence at all. It was completely designed to, you know, I think it's important for readers to have something to turn to after they go to the movies, right? And so I was not involved with the production of the film. I've been in conversation with Deborah Martin Chase, executive producer, but more about sort of us thinking about these projects coming out at the same time. And you know, what I'll say is that I'm thrilled that first of all, that this is a film that's being released right now in 2019. I think it's an important moment. It sort of reminds us of the power of Black women with a very kind of heavy-hitting, all-star Black woman team to put this film together, thinking about the writer, the director, executive producer. And that's no small feat in Hollywood. And I think we have to recognize that and embrace it and hold it up. And so I was excited just when I understood that the film would be released this year and who the sort of major players were. That was important to me because I think, you know, you hear a different story, and this gets into the importance of voice, you know, whose voice is centered in the depiction of Harriet. Who gets to shape and tell the story of Harriet? And I think it's extremely important to have Black women centered in that project in a way that we never have been before. And that's not to say that the contributions by other scholars or even other TV filmmakers, that it hasn't been important. But I do feel like we're in a moment now where there's more opportunity, that there have been some folks who've kind of cleared the way and allowed for this to happen in addition to serious work. And so I've seen the film. I saw an early screening of the film. And, you know, the one thing that filmmakers have to deal with that biographers don't, writers don't, is that they have 2 hours, basically, to tell a story. They have 2 hours to pull in their reader, their viewer, and they have 2 hours to tell us everything that they could or decided to about Tubman. And so they made the decision, as did I, to focus on a young Tubman. And with 2 hours, really, they're only able to cover her life as a young woman, just sort of right before her escape, the actual escape, and her work on the Underground Railroad, and a brief sort of ending with her engaged in military action in the Civil War. And, you know, the film ends in a really sort of a powerful note. But what I imagine viewers will say is, well, what happened afterwards? What happened to Harriet Tubman after the Civil War, after slavery ended? And that's where I'm hoping that people will turn to She Came to Slay, to think about what the next half a century looked like for Tubman. She lived for more than a half a century after the end of the Civil War. And her life is kind of symbolic of the difficulties of Black people in the years following the war, no matter where you lived. And so I'm hoping that the film and the book can kind of work in tandem.
And you know, Dr. Dunbar, you are one of our leading historians on the experiences of early Black women, in the United States. And so my question for you is, what does Tubman mean to you as a scholar of this particular history, and that you are now writing about her in this particular venue at this particular time? What does that mean for you as a person, but also as, you know, the chronicler? Or one of the chroniclers of Tubman.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a great question. I think I feel a tremendous amount of gratitude. I feel fortunate that I have an opportunity, that I have a platform to introduce or reintroduce the lives of formerly enslaved people, or those who never made it from the bonds of slavery, into a larger narrative of American history. And so, you know, in addition to feeling grateful and fortunate that I have the opportunity to do this, to attempt to, as scholars say often, to not necessarily rescue people from the archives, because or from erasure, but, you know, I sort of feel like these stories, these lives are hiding. Not necessarily Tubman, but I'm sort of stretching your question here to think more broadly about Black women's history in early America. And, you know, I think that the stories are there. We're simply, they're waiting to be found, and they're waiting to be shared. And they're waiting to be used as intervention. And I think, you know, the existing biographies of Tubman, as well as She Came to Slay, continues to move that work forward, that I can't really imagine American history without the lives of fugitive women. I don't know what that history looks like. And fortunately, I didn't grow up in an era in which that was the norm. I came of age and started graduate school 10 years after the first texts on enslaved women really kind of hit the shelves. And I'm thinking about my colleague, Dr. Deborah Gray White. I was in graduate school after R&I Woman was published. And so I really had the benefit of going to graduate school at a time in which it was not necessarily considered rare or foolish. Mm-hmm. Let's use that word, foolish, to think about Black women's history. Yet, there still weren't enough texts. And so that made the work more difficult for people in my sort of generation, my cohort. And what's so beautiful is you know, I stand back and I look at all of the new work that's been recently published or will be published soon. And it's exciting. And I think, wow, look at the field. The field has grown exponentially over the past four decades. And I just feel deeply honored to be a part of that growth, to be a part of that field. And I'll say it here, but I think the field of U.S. history, that the most exciting work in U.S. history, early U.S. history, revolves around the lives of Black women. And I think scholars like myself and others who are contributing to that narrative are not simply rescuing stories and bringing these folks into the mainstream or into the light, but in many ways, I feel like we're rescuing the field of American history.
Hey, you know, Dr. Dunbar said it. I'm her student. I'm her grad student at Rutgers. So if y'all hear this, just know this is why I am where I am. You know, because of what you know Dr. Dunbar just said, and you know she is, like I said, one of our best chroniclers of not only early American history, but early Black women's history. And so, you know, Never Caught, there's a reason why that book was amazing, not only because, you know, she wrote it, but because of the passion that she provides into her work. And as one of her students who's in the classroom with her, believe me, there ain't no drop off. There is no drop off. Let me tell you. And so in the brief amount of time that we have left with you, Dr. Dunbar, you know, you talked about, you know, the film and your connection to it along with your book. And so one of the things that I've noticed about Harriet Tubman and how people use particular words and statements that she maybe said or maybe not had said, can you talk to us about some of the misnomers about Harriet Tubman that you believe filmgoers going into the premiere weekend maybe have about Harriet Tubman that might get, you know, changed either in the film or especially in your particular book?
I think that I don't know if it's misnomers. I think it's really just it's a very limited scope when we think about Tubman. I mean, in reality, people know very little about Tubman. My son came in, of course, my son's 15 years old, and he, I don't know, there's this new app or something called TikTok where they're filming videos or whatever. So, and of course, we've been talking a lot about Tubman recently. And he comes in to show me this TikTok, this video that supposedly took place on Harvard University's campus, where there was a person going around with an image, a photo of an elderly Harriet Tubman, asking students, who was Tubman? Now, once again, I don't know the citations. I don't know if this was exactly Harvard University, but that's what the TikTok video said. And they were asking these students, all of whom were white, who's this woman? And none of them knew who she was. None of them. They said Rosa Parks. They said, so it was actually shocking that even the image of Tubman that we all think is sort of iconic was still somewhat unknown to some of the most educated people, or people we claim to be the most educated in the nation. And I think part of that has to do with the way Tubman is introduced when we think about curriculum in the schools. And, you know, it's that top of the page of the textbook with maybe a page of text about her, typically her image sort of standing tall, an older woman, and that's it. And maybe you hit that in February. Maybe you've seen images on Black History Month and other related materials. But I actually think that it's not that people don't have the wrong information about Tubman. I think they just don't know much. They know her name. And I think if each student, as opposed to, you know, having to look at an image and ask, you know, who's this person? I think if the students were asked the question, do you know who Harriet Tubman is? Almost all of them would have said, yes, she escaped from slavery and she was on the Underground Railroad. that probably would have been a common response. And I think a lot that what's important for me with the film and for She Came to Slay is to be able to wed text with imagery, with images. The film, of course, will wed that image of Tubman to someone who's not Tubman, but help the viewer think about a younger woman. All of the images I've used in my, all of the photos I've used in my book are authentic photos of her. And then, of course, the illustrations that help us think about what she looked like. So I think there's more, as opposed to undoing sort of misunderstandings about Tubman, that this is just complicating her life and letting viewers know that there's more about Tubman. And for me, with She Came to Slay, it's really sort of thinking about her life from cradle to grave. How did Tubman, Araminta Ross, get here? Why was she on the eastern shore of Maryland? Who was her direct connection to the African slave trade? And so my book begins not with Tubman's birth in and around 1822, but it begins with the descendant we can connect to the African slave trade, and that was her grandmother, a woman who traversed the Mid-Atlantic, the Middle Passage, and arrived in Maryland sometime in the mid to late 18th century, and was named Modesty. And so my book begins there. It begins with first contact and ends with Tubman's death in 1913.
Wow. An epic story that I cannot wait to have, first of all, my mom read. And hey, Mom, I know you're listening there. And so I have one last question to ask you. It's more so like a kind of like playful question, I guess. If you could ask Harriet Tubman, if you could resurrect her for one night only, and you had, you know, we'll start with one, and if you have others, then that's fine. But we'll just say for the sake of this, if you could ask Harriet Tubman any question, what would it be?
Ooh, well, the question I would want to ask, I don't know that I would, because it's intimate, right?
Understood.
The question that I would want to know is I'd want to know more about that moment that she returns to Maryland. She escapes in 1849, and she leaves behind her husband, John Tubman, who was a free man, who lived on the eastern shore with her. And she returns eventually, maybe 18 months or so after her departure. And she goes into hiding immediately, and she wants very much to connect with him. It's her plan to bring him back to Pennsylvania with her. And she is confronted with sort of devastating news. She hears that he actually does not want to see her. And this is a sort of, fact that is played very differently in the film. But the fact was that she was rejected, that he was not interested in seeing her again, that he had basically hit reset on his life and married another person, a free woman, who, had basically replaced Harriet. And to marry a free woman meant that he would never have to worry about his wife or his children being sold, or at least technically he actually should have worried about that. But logistically, they were free people. And so when Harriet returns, she's in the film, she's heartbroken. In the narrative that she gives later on in her life in 1869 to Sarah Bradford, Tubman's angry. And she's ready to fight this man. And she says she was ready to go in their cabin and basically turn it out. And but she chooses not to, right? She understands that any unwanted attention would blow her cover. And so I think the question that I would ask her is, you know, how did you reconcile that great that pain? You know, having risked your life walking back into the jaws of slavery, walking back to the exact area where you are being hunted for a man who you loved and who's decided that he no longer wants to be with you. How did you reconcile with that pain? And what was that experience like? So I would want to ask her that, but of course, if Harriet Tubman appeared before me, that's the last thing I would say. I've said this in other interviews that I always think about, you know, what would my Nana, my grandmother, tell me how to behave or what to say? And she would say, Erica, that's none of your business. And you need to ask another more appropriate question. And so I think that if I was being PC and I was being formal, I would probably ask her what her greatest regret was. What that regret was, and if she was happy with the way that she lived her life once the Civil War came to a close and once she was a free person, that even with the trials and tribulations, what would she have done differently? So those would have been my real question I would want to know, and then the question, my polite question that I would ask.
No, and all of them are great, and all that we would love to be in the room to learn what her actual answer would be for both of those questions, among probably a number of others that you have, that for good reason you're just going to be like, I'll just keep that in the back of my mind, unless, you know, it might happen, who knows. And so thank you so much, Dr. Dunbar. This has been an incredible opportunity. And to the listening audience here, once again, we had the opportunity to listen to none other than my professor, someone who, you know, has for the last 2 years been in just an important person. And this is, you know, I'm nearing 60 interviews, and this is the one that I was like, all right, I gotta find a way. And so thankfully, you know, She Came to Slay was the perfect book to make this happen. And so once again, folks, we've had none other than Dr. Erica Armstrong Dunbar on to discuss her monumental new book, She Came to Slay, The Life and Times of Harriet Tubman. And also, y'all, if you like today's discussion, please rate us and review us wherever you get your podcast, New Books in African American Studies, which is a part of the New Books Network. And, you know, I am your host, Adam McNeil, and this has been an incredible opportunity to learn about an amazing Harriet Tubman, and for all of us to be able to better understand one of the best, and as Dr. Dunbar mentioned, more unknown figures in our country, and really in Black women's history, you know, globally. And so this has been a great opportunity as well, y'all. Until next time, once again, I am your host, Adam McNeil of New Books in African American Studies, signing off. Over and out.